shot to fuck again. I don't know why.
So, why is that?
I just said I don't know why.
I know. But that's who I am. I ask why.
You're an existentialist.
I'm a sinker, man. Why? Tell me the meaning behind this, Mr. Morgan.
I don't know. It just won't even connect. Like, I went into the program to connect with. There's like a Skype management thing.
This is your job. You are our audio tech.
The Archons. I don't know.
Well, you pissed him off. Like, really bad. Okay, so let's see.
All right, so listen. What the gentleman who we are talking tonight is named James Randall. Is that correct?
Yes.
Randall or Randale?
Randall.
Randall.
And I did send you an email.
Okay, good. I'll go find that.
Do I still sound like him in a bus?
No. I mean, there's. It sounds like there's a
sound
lot
like
of...
you're at the belly of a whale.
No, you sound... There's just a little bit more ambient hiss on the line tonight for some reason, but you sound okay.
Okay.
I mean, there
it
is
sounds
a li-
kinda like It sounds kind of like what he did when he did his show with Always Record, if I remember correctly. But it sounds like there's less commotion going on over there for you tonight, James.
It's way quieter.
So you're in Toronto, that's correct?
Yeah.
And Justin is not.
No. Yeah.
But you guys grew up together.
Yeah. And we went to the same high school in the Okanagan, which is in BC, in Canada somewhere.
British Columbia.
Yeah.
We looked it up when we were talking to him. It looks like a nice place.
Well, yeah. Some of the... Like, the scenery in 1989 is somewhat inspired by it.
So, yeah. I mean, it seems like both you guys are pretty politically minded and active. Is it the natural beauty that inspired you, maybe?
I don't know. It could have been.
All right. Well, let's not. Here, I'll. I've got all my windows up. What about you, Will?
Yes, I do for the time being.
Okay. Let me just. Yeah. Make sure that is working. It looks like it is. Okay. So I'm gonna.
Pull it together, Doug.
It's too much pressure.
Close your eyes.
I can't. It's too much pressure.
Stare out the floor.
Time clock.
Breathe deep.
And the recording.
Count to five.
Oh, my God. Okay, the official 42 minutes time clock is up. It's 79 degrees in Rio de Janeiro and 5 degrees in Winnipeg. That is so cold. 32 degrees in Denver. 41 degrees in Nashville. Okay, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
No, I won't be that bad. I keep a running tally of where it is in my head. I'm good at this, Doug. This is what I do.
So, equipment doesn't work.
Join us with
no. Well, the recorder doesn't work, but the editor works fine.
I don't. But then
last time I had to uninstall it and reinstall it again, and that's what I'll do. I'll write myself a little note to do that within the next couple of days.
So why Toronto, James?
Oh, my girlfriend got accepted to do a grad program here.
Did you guys make it your home after that, or is she still in grad school?
And she still goes to grad school. And then sometimes I go back to work with bees in the summer in the Okanagan. I'm a beekeeper.
My father-in-law.
You're a beekeeper by trade?
Sort of. My dad has a bee farm. I've been working on it for since I was a little kid.
How many hives?
I think right now he's around 200, 300.
Wow.
So is there anything fascinating that you could teach us about bees that the normal individual would have no way of knowing, but person growing up with them like yourself?
Looking stung.
No, I'm just talking about something that's unusual that you've learned that, you know, the average person doesn't learn in school.
Well, there's a disease affecting bees called American foul brood, which liquefies the larva in their cells until they have this disease, because you look at the honeycomb frame, you see these black hardened deposits on the edges.
So how would that work out? Is it secreted through their system and the when they're building the hives? It's like,
I don't know how they get it, but when the larva gets it, they become like these dangerous spore-releasing
baby bombs.
Yeah, like if you find foul brood frames, you have to burn them.
Oh fuck, that's gross.
There's a wonderful video by Menomina. I think I just lost everyone.
I don't know what that is.
But the song is called Evil Bee. It's weird when the sound cuts out. It sounds like everyone's gone.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So you do... James, do you watch TV at all?
I used to, but now I just watch Netflix.
So you watch a lot of movies?
Yeah.
Do you listen to a lot of music?
Yep.
Do you read a lot of comics?
I sort of have my old favorites, but I don't get new ones anymore.
You're not really reading on a regular basis, though?
Well, I read... Counterpunch and stuff all the time.
So what music are you listening to?
Mostly Skinny Puppy.
Mostly Skinny Puppy.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I've heard of this disease before. Alright, and what movies have you been watching? What movies do you like?
I've been watching, trying to find horror movies on Netflix, and they're all really not very good.
You're into horrors, though?
No, I just watch them because my wife hates them, so when she was asleep, I tried to lost time.
All right, wonderful. That's just interesting. I mean, there's this whole gothic... I mean, it seems to me we're reading a book by Victoria Nelson right now, and it's opening my eyes to how gothic pop culture actually is. And I was also talking to, when I went down to Orlando with Andras Jones, we were discussing movies and we were discussing independent film. And really and truly, the only films that really become enormous cult classics that don't have a huge budget and are really independent are horror movies. Do you know what I mean? So there's something about gothic and there's something about horror that is like a necessity almost in, as far as the cultural absorption of fiction. There's got to be a horror element to it, a spooky, supernatural side.
I watched The Hours the other night and I didn't mean to, and it's pretty, I liked it. It's about people skipping through time. These three narratives skip through time. But you wouldn't expect it to be a good movie from the description.
That's a new movie, isn't it? Like, just recent, 2013? No. Did you say really? Hours?
Yeah.
No, did you say Hours?
H-O-U-R-S.
Well, it's funny because there is a film that came out called The Hours that would... it was about Virginia Woolf. And
yeah, that's the one.
Okay, so that's the one you watched?
Yeah.
And then I can't think of the redhead's name.
Julianne Moore?
That's it. And I think Tom Cruise's wife is in there.
Yeah, she's Virginia Woolf.
Yeah, I can't think of her name either.
The Hours.
What's
the
her
Hours.
Name?
She's story.
Got Australian. Hi, I'm Australian. I was in a movie called
Nicole Kidman.
There you go. Okay.
Just skip through time and it all came together at the end, like the kind of like our the transmission from Neptune.
Yeah, it does have kind of separate stories that are going that eventually coalesce into a similar thread, don't they?
And you don't realize it till the end that they're all connected in some way. There are different periods of history. Like one's from the 1920s, and one's from the present day, and one's from
the 1950s
or something.
Isn't Meryl Streep in that film too?
Yeah, Meryl Streep, Julianne Moore, Nicole Kidman,
Ed
Harris.
It's a good movie. And then the other thing that's interesting, I think the book
John C. Reilly.
Miss Dalloway is kind of what it jumps out of, you know, this idea that somebody's getting ready for a party and buying flowers and that, you know. Yeah.
And then the editor is actually doing that. So it's, you can't tell if they're actually writing a story about the 2001 woman.
Right.
All right, wonderful.
It's probably
late, I think
in
this
Toronto,
is...
yes.
Yes, and so this will be out probably halfway through tomorrow, I think sometime around that. I mean, it will take me till about noon, which will be later for you, to get it all cut up and done right. Hopefully before then, but maybe not. So we'll just hit back at you when we're done with it, okay?
Yeah, I hope I answered some questions.
Well, like I said, I'll edit it, so don't worry. Don't let it fret you. It's going to sound good because I think that there's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of good times where we got you talking, which is basically all we want. We weren't very good hosts today. I mean, we've been better. Let me just put it that way. But our job basically is just to ask you questions about what the work you are doing. But I mean, with all the different problems we had and everything, don't worry about it. It was a pleasure talking to you. I'm a big fan of newspaper comic strip. I really like I said, I mean, these are things that are amusing to me and they make my brain move and just I became engrossed with it. So please keep it up because I want to know what happens and I want to know which escape hatch you go out.
Oh, well, thank you. And let me know if I can do anything if something, if you need another answer or something. Or like a,
I don't know. I mean, like, we should do something for there's a magazine that Douglas is trying to get together.
I'm not trying. I'm getting it together, Will.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying. And,
you know
and
what Yoda
you should
says,
really...
right? Do you?
Do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah, so.
Do not fucking test me on Star Wars quotations, motherfucker. Listen, Jake, like, you should really think about writing stuff on a regular basis for Sync Book Press because I know for a fact that we'd put it out and it's there'd be some kind of compensation. I'm not necessarily a comic book strip or newspaper comic strip, but I mean, if you ever wanted to do something of your own, I'm sure that if you had a product that you had, between you guys at Riot Fish that you could put into a book that the Sync Book Press would, you know, press it in a minute. So, and plus, I mean, working with Doug or keeping in contact with Doug or any ideas that you have, I mean, I just, the biggest problem for me is I have so many ideas and just not enough time to realize them. So getting involved with other individuals is the only way to do that, I find.
Yeah. That's actually the major motive for even making a new sort of comic strip now, because working with Justin and him working with me is what motivates us to keep making more of them.
Well, I think I told Justin that if you guys had an idea for a serial that you wanted to work on, but it would be a slow-paced serial because this would be like a quarterly magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if like there was an idea that you wanted to develop in that time frame that would be more bookish, then I think one of the things that Alan likes is to have the Sync Book Press books the same size. So it'd probably be the magazine's probably going to be the same size as the Sync books are. And so that's a bit of a constraint when you were...
No, comic books are all about constraint, though. You only have 3 panels, you only have this, you only have that,
whatever.
No, but so
if it was a bigger, you know, it might be...
It would be about the size of manga. I mean, if you look at the cultural comics that come out of Japan, they're all that book size, your classic, what is that, probably about 8x4 or something like that? No, it's more than that. It's like 8x6, wouldn't you say? No, that's more than 8. That's almost a foot by, like, a foot. Like, it's 12x6, isn't it?
But all I'm saying...
I'm a fucking nerd.
All I'm saying is that if you had something... the first issue is going to happen, but the second issue is going to be the Philip K. Dick issue, and so if there was... And that's going to go down in the summertime, and so if there was something you guys wanted to think about developing, then I say... You know, I welcome anything you produce because it's wonderful work.
Thanks. I actually wanted to, after writing like a real-time strip for so long, I've actually fantasized being able to write like establishing shots and switch the narrative.
Like, you need a splash page.
I can't switch scenes. Yeah.
Well, run with it, I say. But Jason's here. I'm uploading one of the files as we're speaking, Will, to your Dropbox. It was real good meeting you, James.
How many files you got?
Well, there's going to be 2 files.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen. Vaya con Dios.
Bye-bye. Thanks, James.
I am dead ass serious about this whole magazine thing.
All right, so what Will doesn't realize is, so the second issue of the magazine, when it happens, is going to be a Philip K. Dick issue. And I was actually thinking about running that story, if it really is in the public domain, just running it because it's a Philip K. Dick story and it would be free.
It would be so easy to do, really. You just show what he imagined compared to what he reads.
But what I'm saying,
or you could
Justin,
make your own story. I mean, it would be the same. Right. And just say inspired by Philip K. Dick, because it would work it the same way.
Have something, a serial thing that you want to work on.
Ooh, I haven't seen this one. School.
Or if you have some old stuff laying around.
Not a lot of it. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's just like, it's like in bits and pieces, notes, ideas, three-quarter finished paintings and drawings and things.
Or if you wanted to excerpt something or compile something for the first...
There's a lot of what? What'd you say?
I said there's a lot to draw on, no pun intended.
Oh, I enjoyed that pun. I enjoy a good pun just as much as the next guy. All right, so look, man, this stuff is, I mean, were you taught how to do this, or are you self-taught how to do this?
I think I did a year of, like, a first year of fine arts. I think I tried going back for a second year, and it was, like, shitty little Canadian, I think it wasn't even a university then, it was like a university college. And
so what do you do for money?
Not a whole lot at the moment. So probably a lot of people are in that boat these days, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be moving down to the south of Okanagan pretty soon. I have a friend that's always trying to get me to move down there, and I didn't really want to go down there at first because he was sort of throwing a lot of like dubstep raves and stuff, and it's just sort of a scene that I'm not really... Well, I'm getting a little old for that stuff, and it's really my thing to begin with, but he's shaping up a bit, and there's like a steady girlfriend and stuff, so he's not quite as mad. I've lived with him before, and it's a little chaotic, so I'll probably be going down there and looking for some work and hopefully find some more work and have a garden and stuff. So.
You're laughing at the idea of having a garden, Will?
No, it just is such a simple... Like, that's what my goal
is. Well, that's one of the elements of your...
I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to go here. That hopefully this will work. But all I'm really concerned about is if I have that garden.
Yeah, well,
it's a big deal.
I was so miserable living in apartments in Kelowna a few years ago. The last actual job I had was like a cleaner for a seniors care home. And it was so depressing. I've actually do have a garden here.
But that sounds like a strip.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it would be so gross.
All right, I'm about to check the folder and see if this... It has to kind of cook. Sorry. It records it, and then it decides to put it from a WAV file to an MP3, so you have to wait on it a second.
He doesn't know what you're talking about.
The recording that we just did.
I know.
Yeah, the anthology, that sounds awesome. Like, I think I definitely hit a point where just, like, Facebook and message boards and stuff is just not enough anymore, so... And there's a lot of talent out there, I'm pretty sure, and I'm just not even sure if the talent realizes that it can do more than it's doing. So
there's a lot of talent, but the strangeness of the internet culture is that no one pays for anything anymore, and so no one gets paid.
But see, there's a misunderstanding about what comics are too. I mean, the majority of there's a common consensus, and the common consensus is that comics are for children. A lot of people would say that sports are the same. Well, not in certain cultures.
Now
it's all the culture.
Michael Silverblatt is in interviewing graphic novelists on Bookworm.
Well, everybody wants to be a huge fan and not do really that much work. So they'd rather be an actor than a... But to me, like, a comic book is a cheap way of doing movies, and you can accomplish a lot. Comics are propaganda.
Storytelling.
I don't know that I'd agree with that, but I've definitely seen people that literally have tried to do that, like the comics and stories. They're a pair of guys, and they literally worked, I think their day job was doing something in the film industry in Vancouver, but they basically wanted to produce a film about some superheroes in the in the poor section of Vancouver, the tastings and stuff. But they couldn't do this. It wasn't feasible for a bunch of guys with working film stuff to put it together a film like this. So it was easier to put it together as a comic book. So I shared a table with them a couple times, and it just the nice guys and stuff, but they were selling it like it was a movie. It was just kind of like, I don't know. It didn't quite feel right to me.
At the same time, you have people like Alan Moore, who won't have anything to do with Watchmen because he's like, what I did in a comic book, you can't do in a movie. Yeah. And we specifically did it so because we couldn't do certain things that, he was against the movie idea because it was like, it was part of the art in and of itself. And like I said, I love the comic format. I feel truly that somehow operates both the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. I watch movies now with the subtitles on because I get the same effect. It's like you're getting two different layers of the information, so your brain's like having to do a little bit more work. And,
but you're taking screenshots too, so you got to have those on for your blog, right?
But at first,
that was kind of a sink joke.
Yeah, right? I know. Some people don't know, a sink head's best. A sink head's most useful tool is the slowdown mechanism on VLC media player.
Well, I mean, as far as I can tell, it's just the sinkers are basically kind of doing what I used to do to sort of sit with media on a computer in this case, but. Just more with music and sampling things and stuff, and it seems like sort of a part of just the technical remix, a technology-based remix kind of thing, where they're taking things apart and giving them new spins and things. It's have you ever seen the Scary Mary? It's sort of like a scary horror movie cut. Of a trailer for Mary Poppins and the whole away with scary music and stuff. And I've seen a lot of stuff like that even before I knew there was a sync community. And same with the Pink Floyd album with The Wizard of Oz. I can't remember what that's called.
The Dark Side of the Moon before. Or The Dark Side of the Rainbow or something.
There's also a good one. I think I saw this before I found Sync too. It was called Shining. It's not The Shining. It's Shining, and it's like The Shining.
Yeah. I know exactly.
The kind of up tempo adults,
One man.
Shining.
Oh man. Yeah. That's
you guys are nerds.
You've got a lot of nerve, Sinkhead. No, I've slowed way down. It's funny because I used to watch a lot of movies because it seemed like that was part of the conversation, that to understand all the references, you have to watch all these horrible movies. My poor wife, week after week, it's like, okay, we're going to watch all of John Carpenter's catalog this weekend so I can be part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of makes me tired thinking about how often they must rewatch some of these films. I mean, I get it. I mean, I used to sit there, at least as far as making electronic music goes, just sit there for tens of hours a week, just doing nothing but tweaking things and tweaking the mix. I think basically, in a sense, what's going on is they're learning how to be editors in a way, I think.
I see.
There's a good video series called Everything is a Remix. And it seems like part of the sync culture is almost one step beyond that, where it's like reappropriation. We're taking archetypes and telling a different story or a bigger story or stories that bleed out of the panels like newspaper comic strip does, where all of a sudden, you have your character and here it is, but we're taking your character, reappropriating it, and showing you how much more that there is to this character. I don't know. The sync videos they're so sexy. They're just so, when they're good, they're really good.
Yeah.
You're a nerd and a pervert.
it's like, I think we've got this great art movement going, but I can't figure out how anyone's going to get paid for it. That's.
I think it might just, the people involved might have to recognize that there's more than just SYNC going on, and it's just another part of what every other artist does, I think.
There's definitely that. Mm-hmm. That it almost seems like part of this is saying something that is just unspoken. And but then part of me also thinks that there's more to that, that this is almost like a new paradigm. Like there's a real embracing of something that's...
Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes, I don't know what to think about it. I change all the time. What was I going to say? Oh, shit, I just lost my thread. That's probably why I'm not a very good thinker.
I can't hold a thought.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I don't know how these guys smoke all that weed. I assume there's a lot of blazers, but...
You do too, though.
We're well known for it.
Sika.
But, yeah.
All right.
Sika. Okay, yeah, we're going to have to talk to James, too, because I think that guy's probably a nut as well.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on, for sure. I mean, he's married and has a kid and stuff, but, you know.
That makes three of us.
So. How was he's the same age, right? You guys were in school?
Sorry?
You guys were in school together?
Yeah, we were in high school together.
Same age then, I'm asking?
Yeah, we were in the same art class and shit.
Did you graduate in 1995 or 96?
I think technically it was supposed to be 97. I think I graduated a year or two later I had a few courses missing or something.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I graduated in 97, a year younger than you, though. You were born in 77?
Yeah, July 23rd.
Why do I think you're only 30, Will?
Everybody does. Like, some people think that I'm under 30, but I'm 35. I grew up in the 80s. That's why I was confused.
Are you sure? I always think that you're more of the millennial type that was graduating, like, in about 2000.
Douglas, listen, I am ageless.
The 70s are like, my 70s are the same as your 80s.
Right. This is weird, though. Have you guys noticed how, like, when you were in the 90s, thinking about the 80s, you realize, like, man, that was a long time ago. But in the 2000s and then the 10s, I mean, it feels like the 1990s was not that far back. I don't know if it was because the 80s had such characteristics, you know, that
were
like...
No, the 90s have characteristics, though. It's just, it's weird, though. You're right. And then if you go back and then you look...
The 70s have characteristics.
Gap?
The 60s have characteristics. The 50s do. The 40s do. The 30s do.
No, what they're saying is that the 90s do, and then...
Kind of. It's just like a grunge.
After
that. The only
thing
that I can pin
like
on the 90s is the grunge.
Digital culture made everything... There's no more character anymore. Everything is like gaga-fied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely something happened in the late 90s where it just like... And I can't tell if it's just because I started getting older or something in the culture changed or, I mean, obviously there was 9/11 and internet, so.
But I think the big difference for me was Y2K, and it wasn't because I was scared of Y2K or anything, but after Y2K, after we switched over to the millennium and before 9/11 happened, there seemed like we had reached this plateau where it was like, oh, that's it. Like, during the 80s and 90s, because of media and because of TV and stuff, we were led to believe that there was, like, a grand ending coming, a grand, like, finale where us, the generation that was meant to, was going to take over and everything was going to have a happy ending. And when it came to 2000 and nothing happened, you're like, oh, we have another decade of nothing. I was almost depressed.
I think December 21, 2012, kind of filled that void in a way, I think. And just for whatever reason, people invested a lot into that. So I don't really have an opinion on it one way or another, but I, even though I felt it, just like, I was actually kind of glad when it had passed. Just like, you know, I didn't expect anything. It just, I was still pensive about it. So
I was the same way in a lot of ways. I mean, probably 2008, I was worried about, or right before 2008, I was worried about 2012. But once, like, the fucking bubble, like, all of this, I was so peaceful when 2012 was coming. I was probably more giddy when Y2K happened. And it wasn't that I really expected anything to happen on Y2K. It was just that afterwards it was like, there's no help coming. Do you know? It just felt like there was no help coming. Everybody would put...
Well, you know, like,
go ahead.
Please. I was just going to say, like, I mean, for decades, I mean, I had all this stuff about the year 2000. I mean, everything was like... So much pop culture stuff, movies, cartoons, everything. It's like, oh, there's this bird. Someday that'll be the future. Someday that'll be the future, at least if you're, like, watching a lot of cartoons and stuff.
Yeah, it's just, so what do you think about all of the stuff that came out in the 80s? Were you a big fan of, like, American cartoons during the 1980s, like G.I. Joe, Transformers, blah, blah, blah?
To an extent. I mean, we had, like, a... Like, growing up here, it's like, there were a few, there were like a, there's a Vancouver station, there's CBC, which is like, I don't know how to translate that. It's kind of like NPR, but it produces its own TV shows and series and things. So there's slightly different cultural references there, things we remember, but I'm sure that people that live close to the border, they picked it up on their TVs, and here we picked up stuff from like, we had at least, like we had like the full American lineup as far as TV goes, like NBC, ABC, CBS, and stuff. So, and we picked up all the stations from Washington State, mostly Seattle and stuff. So that's why I feel a bit of solidarity to an extent with people from Seattle, even though I've never technically been to Seattle.
You're more of a Jim Henson kind of guy.
Yeah, definitely Jim Henson. Jim Henson.
I can see that it's just, it's funny, because like I said, I thought you were much younger, and then when I saw your cultural references and comic strip, I was like, wait
right.
a second, wait a second.
Well, wait I thought you were actually a little older.
Yeah.
I thought you might be 40. Closer to 40s when I started reading it, because you just, there comes off a, I don't know if it's just the illusion of doing the comic strips, but for some reason, like, the storyteller takes on this wiser than the persona in someone's head. You know, I'm listening to this guy, he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And there's this...
The author isn't an authority.
Right, right. But you can tell that you know what you're doing as far as, like, the over... Because newspaper comic strip is a newspaper comic strip. It's like... You know what I mean? It's passable for a profession, and it looks better than early Calvin and Hobbes. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my God!
I mean, like, with most comics, you can see a progression in how the artist started out drawing the character and what that they ended with. There's like, but yours has like a professional feel from the very jump. It feels like a newspaper.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's definitely... I mean, I'm not too deep.
Well, that's the thing I wonder about. If a newspaper...
All of your art feels
if
like...
If someone got wind of this, if they would pick it up.
You'd have to bleep it, because he does cuss. He gets pissed off.
Well,
like,
I mean,
fuck
but
this
it's,
shit, God damn it.
The palette is big enough that you guys... Could,
comic strip?
What's that?
Like, I don't know how that would be, like an actual newspaper.
Sure, and then, so, like, you get syndicated in all the papers, and there you have newspaper comic strip, and you're doing all this meta self-referential things, and you've got your guy climbing around the paper.
Yeah.
It would be great.
Because you guys basically, like...
Climb around the whole page.
Yeah. I mean,
the website, as far as I can tell, is the only way we can really, really pull off what we want to do, because you could be seeing scenes, you know, bits of newspapers cut out and stuff, because we apply the actual newsprint to it and stuff, and just so it looks like that.
That's why I asked if you were a fan of Scott McCloud, because it seems like you're at that par of storytelling. Like, I'm not flat. I'm not gushing here. Am I gushing?
Yeah, you always gush.
A little bit. My ego, or my anti-ego, is deflecting it towards James, at least as far as newspaper comic strip goes. Because I don't know exactly what his process is, but it must be an intense visualization and mentation process, because he's able to time things. And just like, and what he gives me is like, chicken scratch little thumbnails that I've had to learn over time to decipher. He's always sort of had a little cartoony style, but he just doesn't want to be a cartoonist or anything, so he's never developed discipline and stuff. But I'm familiar enough with it that I can read it, and he gives me a little transcript, and I sort of add my water to it, and it grows into something. So it's just like, oh, okay, well, the timing, looking back, that actually worked really well. Did you mean to do that? And so yeah, he's definitely very aware of what's going on the page, but I think he would probably balk at the idea of going into an actual syndicated comic. I think we would rather just, and we've definitely been encouraged by a few semi-professional people that we know online and stuff. Like, have you guys ever heard of Jason Youngbluth?
No.
Deep Fried Comics. He does two things he's kind of known for. One of them's called Weapon Brown. It's like a post-apocalyptic, sort of just a classic science fiction tale, but the whole thing takes place with like newspaper characters. And I think we just sort of came up with our stuff in parallel. And so the main character is Weapon Brown. He's Charlie Brown, but like, he's got like a fucking robot arm. And really, it's really like rated R kind of stuff, like something out of an 80s film or something. That sort of feel of a post-apocalyptic world. And there's a syndicate and stuff. And
I'm looking at it, yeah.
So yeah, he tried to encourage us to definitely go to the book form and go to some cons and things. But I mean, as far as publishing goes, yeah, it's like the reason they repeat graphic novel, it's so they have something to say, okay, this, we can put a section in a bookstore and put graphic novels in there. So, but
okay,
that's sort of why I say I'm not really a comics, I don't follow a lot of comics. To me, it's more like, it's so like, you know, it's like if you're a novelist or something, or you're a writer, you don't necessarily think of yourself, like, you don't think all novelists are the same thing. You don't go, like, somebody who, like, writes harlequin romance isn't going to automatically associate themselves with, like, Thomas Pynchon or whatever.
Whatever. No, but totally, I know what you're saying. It's like... Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah,
it's not the same type of art. It's not the same craft.
It's like, it would just be cool, like, yeah. If there wasn't the comics. I mean, there's a conceit, presupposition, there's presumption about what it is, but at the same, you've got to kind of acknowledge that to an extent, like the history of it, and where you're, who else has done things and stuff, but it's not as important, I don't think, as people think.
Are you a fan of Will Eisner?
I have a few of his books, but sort of came to it lately or later. I was a huge, huge impact on me was Dave Sin and Cerebus.
Dave Sin and Cerebus, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Like number 5 of Spawn crossed over with him. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it number 5?
Yeah, that was...
Say, what?
I read a pretty good Canadian graphic novel recently. It probably was like 2 years ago. I can't think of the guy's name, though. It was about like a native rights white guy, Canadian. Oh.
Did you say native rights?
Yeah.
Was it Gord Hill's 500 Years of Indigenous Resistance comic book?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was like Louis...
Oh, Louis Riel. Chester Brown's Louis Riel?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's out east. It was, I think they're based out of Montreal or Drawn and Quarterly. It's sort of like, I haven't read a lot of their stuff, but they, to me, from what I've seen, it kind of seems sort of on par with, like, Fantagraphics.
Yeah, I almost confused the two places. So that's interesting.
All right, so listen, guys, I have to go to sleep.
Yeah. All right.
But it has been fantastic talking to you, man. You're like, you do what I would want to be able to do, but I'm not good enough.
You know what? Let me tell you a story, Will. There's a author, a writer. His name is Malcolm Gladwell. He came out with a book called Outliers. And the whole thing details how none of the people we think are special are all that special. It's just 10,000 hours.
Me and my friend always have like an 80 hour. We have a joke that's always 80 hour. I think we've talked about this. Like,
I've never talked about it with you.
We have never told you this whole theory?
80 hour theory.
80 hours, you can learn how to drive a helicopter, right? If you just put in 80 hours of flying, they consider you a pilot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, if you spend 80 hours doing anything, you spend 80 straight hours trying to learn Spanish, you're going to be pretty damn good at it.
No, you won't. The Beatles played, like, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week in some strip club in Germany.
Yeah, but that they were already good, or they wouldn't be playing.
No, they weren't good at all. That's because they got good.
No, go back and do the history, motherfucker.
No, that was in the book. And so this is what's so amazing to me is these guys have been doing this since 2000. Right? So they've got 10 years under your belt. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a bit before that. Like, I did, like, I've got some really shitty comics I drew in pencil, like, back in, like, grade 5 and 6 and 7. They're just, like, just dumb kind of fantasy comics where I would repurpose my friends and put them in a futuristic thing and we would be fighting with robot teachers and stuff like that. Just sort of stuff like that, goofy things. So. But, I mean, I didn't take it seriously until I was definitely in my 20s.
All right. Final question is, how many hours does it usually take for you to do a painting? Like one of these that are in your gallery?
Man, that's really hard to say. Cause sometimes I'll, like, go really hard for a few days. I'll, like, have, like, wow, I'm really into it. And other times I'm just like, eh. I don't really have a lot of motivation to do this. I'm not really going to get paid to do this, and I'll just kind of wander off and do something else for a while.
Right.
And then, so I definitely finished things that I've you know, started years before. So there are quite a few digital paintings that are kind of in that state right now. But yeah, so not the most prolific guy, no. But I would say it depends. Like, I can do a newspaper comic strip update in about, you know, minimum of, like, 3 hours, depending on how big it is and which color and stuff. But the painting, it's probably in the tens of hours.
Hmm. So to pop out a newspaper comic strip, like, when the guy's doing Garfield, would you think it was around the same amount of time? It only takes 3 hours' time to produce a pan or three-paneled comic? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm sure it differs on the artist and even before the internet and stuff, like with like newspapers and comic books, you were really restricted by who was publishing your stuff, like the syndicate and the distribution and the time schedules and stuff. So you would work in big chunks, and I know like Bill Watterson, Calvin and Hobbes, he's written that I think he would do like huge chunks of just straight up writing. Like he wouldn't do any actual art at all. I mean, he would pencil a whole bunch of stuff and then ink a whole bunch of things. But it definitely varies. It depends on how the person is doing it. Like Dave Sim, he self-published everything, but he had to deal with Diamond distributors and stuff. And so he had to be, like he was like a month or two ahead of where his readers were and sort of thing. And working daily, kind of 9-to-5 kind of deal. But, you know, that's, it definitely is also an individual thing, so.
Intriguing. So, like we said earlier, we're going to have to talk to you again later, and perhaps get your partner in crime to talk to us here coming up soon. But until then, man, I'm going to start getting really dumb with my comments if I don't go to bed.
Okay. I'll let you go.
Yeah, thanks so much.
It was a very relaxed chat.
Good.
Wonderful.
Good. Yeah, I think it turned out really well. So,
cool.
Thanks so much, and I'm going to keep on enjoying this. Right? That's what's great about your site is that you don't have to necessarily. I mean, it lends itself to reading it linearly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in time, even though they're different strips and you're reading different things.
Somehow it works. That's why
it really works.
That's why I was
really
wondering.
Really?
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, they're different strips, and it's a lot like Watchmen in a way, you know, like you were saying, because with the pirate comic, the comic inside of a comic that happens inside of Watchmen, it's the same thing. You can see how the two stories are related, but not really, almost randomly, and it seems the same thing is happening inside of the Riot Fish website. It's like these things almost look like they're planned.
Yeah, we definitely are aware of that thing, sort of like looking back, it's like it feels like it's planned, but a lot of that's just like because we go, okay, well, why don't we try running one column of newspaper comic strip at a time, or one row of newspaper comic strip at a time for a while, and we'll do that. Like, okay, well, we don't like that, and we'll change that up, but I mean, it does change. I mean, from our perspective, it's probably a little bit different. It's really hard to tell what the readers think, so. And I don't even know who most of them are, so.
You guys haven't gotten very many comments on this stuff?
Not a lot.
Do you have any way of monitoring your site traffic?
A little bit, just through the web host. But, yeah, as far as I can tell, we've been averaging maybe 800 to 1,000 unique visits a day, but I don't really know what that translates. Into
actual readers and not just Google searches.
Yeah, so we've had a few long-term fans and stuff, but
I love it. I dig it.
Alright, well, actually, we'll probably let you go.
Alright, yeah, thanks so much, and we'll be in touch.
Good night, sir. Yeah.
That's one of the big touchstones.
Right, because so when I moved, that was half the fun to find both the Twin Peaks and the Northern Exposure's filming locations.
Yeah. Was Northern Exposure done in Washington?
It was. It wasn't Seattle. It was up the road in a town called Rosalyn, and that's why the Rosalyn Cafe on the wall in the opening credits shot. I mean, what was so interesting about that. So, like, the Twin Peaks was spread out all over the place. Half, you know, parts were in the bay and, like, around Bainbridge Island, and other parts were way up in the mountains by Snoqualmie Falls and stuff. And so they constructed this location out of, you know, and this is how most places do it. What was interesting about Northern Exposure was basically the town was the exterior set. And so when you went into the town, you felt like you were in the set. I mean, you really were. And what's goofy about that place is in every episode of that show, it was like the director would say, okay, release the dogs. And, you know, you have dogs that run across the frame. But when you go to the town, it seems like those dogs are still there and you'll get a dog
It was goofy. Will,
oh, man. That was...
are you here?
Yes, indeed. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. Does my connection sound fine?
I mean, you sound great.
Okay, because I'm actually outside in like a shed right now. So.
Is that where you want to be? Is it really cold where you're at?
Yeah, that's why I've got like 3 pairs of pants and a sweater and a...
Hey, man, let me ask you, how old are you?
Hmm?
See, we both were thinking about that because of your references.
Oh, yeah. Well, we went through that. It took a little while to get to the number, but I'm 35.
35, yeah, you're my age.
Okay, and so I wasn't recording anything, but Will, you are now recording?
Yep.
Okay, and usually, depending on how things go, sometimes some of the extra stuff ends up in what we call a green room, where it's just,
right.
Yeah.
And this is Justin, sure. Correct?
Yep. Yeah.
And, how do you pronounce your last name?
I think I figured it out. Is
go
it
for
Pasika?
It.
Yeah, it's Pasika. Yeah.
Pasika.
Well, apparently there's 2 ways to pronounce it. It depends on which word it is. There's another word, a Ukrainian word that means something else. I can't remember, but it's pronounced Pasika. But Pasika, it's a pond in Ukraine and, Ukraine and Poland. Sort of, it means apiary. Or beekeeper. A lot of beekeepers have it sort of like, you know, like Miller and Smith and that sort of thing.
So are you saying your name means beekeeper?
Yep.
Okay.
See?
What does a Morgan do?
Ah, oh, fuck if I know. I thought it meant like morning or something.
Oh, in German it does.
Guten Morgen.
Guten Morgen. Hey, well, look, real quick, let me set up. I'm going to go get me something to drink because I just got out of the shower, man. It's cold as hell outside. But
how cold is it?
I don't know. It's cold.
It's 9 degrees in Boise, Idaho.
I don't know if it's that cold. But anyways,
it's
listen,
so
man, I'll be right back.
Is it like Celsius?
No.
Oh, okay.
When it's funny because no matter how, I wonder if I could turn my thermometer to Celsius to see. Yeah, I'll set it to Celsius and then I can, you'll have some reference. So right now it's -13 Celsius.
Yeah, that's pretty cold. That's probably colder than here.
But it's been so cold here lately. It was funny, I traveled to Winnipeg in 2010, and even though Canada and the United States are basically the same thing, there's
yeah.
still enough differences where it's hard not to say, oh, that's so weird, because, you know, where I live, this is how we do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It almost seems kind of arbitrary to me at times, so. Yeah.
But... Yes. Okay. So, you are in where you're at, and James is, where's he at?
Well, we're both in the same place originally. Like, this is my hometown, but, so he's from here, but he's in Toronto right now.
Okay.
2034 in an apartment downtown Toronto.
Okay, and so you guys started out in the same location, and you guys are collaborating together, and then he moves away, but the Internet's this wonderful thing, and so you can still collaborate.
Yeah, even when you lived here, like he lived in a little town called Armstrong, just north of here, about 15, 20-minute drive, and we didn't really hang out a whole lot. We still used the Internet a lot just to trade our shit around and stuff, so I think, he used to run a BBS way back in the day, so...
Oh, so he's an original gangster?
Yeah. And BND. He used to be a dean.
Oh, excellent. So I'll have something to talk about when we talk to him. Is he the same age as you? Did you guys go to school together?
Yep. We were in up to grade 11 together, and then I switched high schools for an art program, and we're pretty much the same age.
This lake I'm looking at, Okanagan?
Yeah.
pretty low.
In Okanagan
so,
Valley,
Doug, have you seen his gallery? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Don't interrupt, Will.
Have you seen his gallery? Have you seen his gallery?
Yeah, I'm going to ask him some questions about his gallery as soon as we start. Do you want to start?
Yes. Do you have something? Because I do have none.
Did you check your email? Of course.
Just an intro. Okay, I'm ready.
I'm not near a computer or anything, guys. So.
Okay, you are okay. I mean,
analog.
Yeah, but it works out. It's great because for the longest time, you know, at first we had to have our guests call into a number, and if they were international, it started becoming really a nuisance. And then all of a sudden I realized, hey, we can call them internationally with Skype, and it doesn't cost anything, basically.
You're kidding.
So it's perfect, you know, and Will wanted to use Skype anyway. He didn't like calling into the it had bad sound quality, so. And now we both have fancy headsets. We look like we're air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
And sometimes we are. Sometimes I have to tell Doug to pull up, in fact.
Ground control to Major Tom. Okay, let's see. I need to open all my correct windows. Here's that window, and then I have my 42 minutes official time clock.
All right.
And let's see. And then I just need to make sure I have my ThinkBook ready. Okay. All right, here I go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
My alias is completely meaningless. I didn't realize I'd be using Skype a lot.
It's nice. But did you do some audio thing?
Testing.